Welcome everybody to the, wow, it's already April, the 12th of April, Aries Bifold Users Group call. I will go ahead and throw in the link here to the agenda for today. First, we want to notice the Linux Foundation antitrust policy and the Hyperledger Code of Conduct. So make sure that we are being welcome and open to all. Feel free to add yourself to the attendees list. Is there anybody new who would like to introduce themselves? We'd love to hear from you. Awesome. Well, we're glad to have everybody here. Are there any announcements or deployments and work updates that we would like to bring attention to this group? Awesome. On the agenda today, have a couple of items here. Some discussion about scheduling. We have a basic messaging demo prepped from Ryan Kochi, and some discussion as well as time to discuss any open PRs. And then time for question and answers for the maintainers. Are there any specific items that people would like to see added to the agenda?
James, maybe I'm not sure for this meeting or the next one. I've noticed that AFJ and some of the other repositories, they use Yarn. I don't know if there is any desire to align with the other packages and the other libraries, or not necessarily?
Yeah, no, that's I know we had discussed that at one point previously. I will throw that here on the agenda to discuss. Awesome. With that, let's jump into our first item here being I wanted to bring up next, in 2 weeks, our next call is overlapping with IIW. And I'm not necessarily sure what we should go about doing here. I know we've previously canceled calls in the past for IIW because I know a number of us will be busy and away at that. So I wanted to get thoughts here on what we should be doing here.
What's IIWJ?
IIW is the Internet Identity Workshop, where a bunch of the people in this community will be involved to discuss how to move things forward and have some pretty cool discussions. Sam, you might be able to give it a little bit more justice than I did there.
It's a conference that happens every 6 months, and it's focused on identity. And so the topics kind of come and go over the years, but this has been going on for like more than 15 years. So it's pretty cool. Lots of folks show up there. The last several have been online because of all the pandemicness, and this one's actually in person in Mountain View. And so if you are able to go, I highly recommend it. Not just because you'll find people interested in the same topics that you are, but there's lots of peripheral learning and goodness that happens there. It's an unconference, so it's not like sit and listen to people talk. It's like have active discussions on things. And anyone can propose sessions. And so it ends up being just a really incredible conference. It's the best conference that I attend on a regular basis. It's amazing.
So given that it's going to be in person this year, what are your thoughts on how it'll impact this meeting? Is it
is it kind of like we're, well, maybe we should cancel if there's not a lot of people going to be here. You guys are all going to it.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. We could, in theory, since this is a biweekly call, we could swap to either the week before or after if we wanted to.
I think the problem is it overlaps with Akapog then?
Hmm.
So, I mean, if we don't have any major topics, I'd be in favor of just kind of post, like canceling it for that week, and it gives a chance for people to go to IAW.
I'm in favor of that. If there is need for a meeting, then I think we can definitely make something happen there. But I think that makes the most sense to me. Awesome. Thank you for the input and thoughts here, and Sam for giving an overview on IIW. I threw in the link here if you want to check that out. Awesome. And DCO has been working on basic messaging and adding support for that into Aries Bifold. And we wanted to do a demo. And so Ryan, take it away.
Hey guys. Let me go ahead and share my screen here. So for the demo, I am just going to be using the ECPi agent and the Aries Bifold. I already have the two connected to prepare for the demo. All I've done is initialize the Aries Bifold wallet and then connect them. So from here, everything's pretty much the same. You still go to the settings and then contacts, and then these are now clickable. And we'll just navigate you to a basic messaging screen between the two. And hopefully, if my internet's been stable since I set this up. Yeah, there we go. And we'll send a message back. And it comes through. From the basic messaging screen, I added a little info icon to click on it and still get the contact details. So yeah. Is there any feedback or questions?
Looks good. It's exciting.
So, Ryan, you've prepped the code for this, so you can actually submit the PR just following this meeting, right?
Yeah. I just wanted to check. I know there's some differences in styling and in how we ended up making the messaging screen. So I wanted to see if there's any changes or any UI things anyone wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm. One of our next things that we're thinking of doing is doing some of the configuration around the navigation so that contacts is a little bit more easily usable, and also a little bit of improvement on the UI on the contact screen itself. And the intention there is also to make, hopefully make the navigation changes there configurable so that we don't have a, we can continue to have our own opinions on that, where those differ. Awesome. Thank you, Ryan, for the demo. I'm looking forward to the PR. Next up was Yarn. We had a discussion a while back about switching Bifold to using Yarn instead of NPM, which aligns better with AFJ and some of the other related projects. I don't think there was any opposition to doing so. Is there any other flavor or anything that you wanted to add on here, Klesio, or things that we should consider?
No, I don't think I have any preference. I just know that Yarn may handle a little bit better the monorepo multiple packages, okay, the way that it does in-house with AFJ and so on. But I'm not chipping in. I think they both works fine. It's just a matter of maybe consistency. I don't know if anybody has ever encountered any issue related to that. The other thing that I've noticed that React Native and some of the boilerplate, they prefer Yarn, and some of the out of the box run Yarn commands.
I think Yarn was produced by the React or Facebook, so I don't know if it's just preference because it works better, but
that's a good point. So I guess what I'll ask, because it seems like this may line up better with the project and our community in general, is there anybody opposed to us making this change? Awesome. I think you have your answer there, Klesio. I think we should go ahead and change that over to Yarn.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you for bringing that up. I had added an item on here for there's some discussion on the Discord where I was asking about some of the ledger configuration with Akif. I don't think I see him on the call today. So
I'm here. Yeah. Maybe my name's showing up.
Yeah, it's a shortened name. So I wanted to follow up here on this. The thought process here was discussing about the structure of how we're configuring the ledgers. And I think you had some good thoughts and reasoning.
Yeah. So I basically split them out into different folders so that initial init config wasn't getting just ungodly huge with all the Genesis transactions.
Right.
I realized the way I kind of did it might be a little bit confusing. So I'm thinking instead, maybe a good compromise is we keep the Genesis transactions separate in separate files and then just reference them as a path in the config, and maybe just keep that as a best practice, but then we'll just specify one config array with everything in it, and instead of having the separate directories like this. Right. I don't know if that makes more sense or.
So if I'm following what you're saying here is, so rather than splitting it out like this, you would actually have all of these in line in one array in this file, right?
File. Well, just the configuration object itself, but keep the Genesis in their own directory so that at least we're not creating a huge array, but that way it's easy to see in one place all the configurations, and then you can just plug the ones in and out that you want,
Yes, that is exactly along my thing. Having the Genesis file or transactions arrays, that's kind of insane, in my opinion, to do.
Yeah, they get really big, especially with like some of the ones we added. They were just like huge strings.
Yeah.
So I think I can put a PR in for that and fix that up. And what it'll just be is just a folder with all the Genesis transactions, and then the config will sort of live back in the app, I guess. App.tsx is where it was. Or I think it's been moved, but
right.
I'm not sure if that's kind of where you would want to have it kept, or do we want to still export it from another location?
So I guess one thought to consider was, I know one of the things that was at one point helpful for some quick development or testing is if you need to add a ledger really quickly, just be able to specify a URL in the .env was a quick way to be able to add another ledger. And what we could do is actually loop through the .env or any ledgers in the .env and put them into the array. So I've been debating whether or not that would be useful, you know, so.
yeah, it could be. Is there a reason why we're using a .env file and not something like YAML or whatnot, where we can specify lists of things? Because I'm just curious, I think with the .env file, it might be challenging if you want to specify more than one ledger you're working with. I think it would only allow you to do one, right? And it depends on like the keys that you're specifying.
Right. You might be able to do a JSON blob.
Yeah.
But that might be, it might blow up on you too. So I haven't tested.
Yeah, I haven't tried it either. So I'll take a look at it. Why don't we do this? Like, I'll first at least get the structure reorganized, and then we can extend the config with whatever's in the ENV file, so that if you're developing, it's really easy to just plug one in and you can kind of get going really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's just one for now, we can just specify which keys and then go from there.
Right. That makes sense to me.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you for your thoughts and effort here. Does anybody else have comments they want to weigh in here before we move on?
I do. I'm trying to divine from the conversation, but real soon now, the did indie method will be present, which will allow for sort of uniform operation and discovery of indie networks. Has that been discussed as part of the strategy?
I do not
yet.
Yeah.
Trying to divine with my lack of deep experience here, it looks like you're headed in a direction that can be modified to accommodate that, which is great. I'm trying to line up those two efforts. The nice part about having did indie stuff present is that one piece of that is a GitHub repository that will contain Genesis files. And so there's a couple of options there. One of them is the ability to retrieve Genesis files on demand from that GitHub repository in order to be able to talk with each of those networks as you discover them. And then indie did actually specify which of those networks they use. So if you can know whether you have the Genesis transactions for a particular network or not already. So anyway, that's a little bit of the basics there, but making sure that you see what's coming there might assist in adding it as soon as that becomes a thing. The as far as status on that work, the work has been done and tests have been written. And so the next piece of it will be a discussion about expected speed of deployment around networks, but it's definitely coming.
Okay, that's good to know, because then maybe I could do some more research into that. I guess the idea is right now we just want to clean up the way the configuration's current set up and then go from there. But yeah, that's something to keep in mind.
For sure. And you got to make stuff work today, right? Yeah. In addition to being able to prepare for tomorrow. But if you know where it's going, then that might help.
Yeah, no, that's a valid point.
Yeah, I threw in the AFJ documentation because one of the things that is important here for at least how it's working today is the pool selector algorithm. So for identifying if a DID is on one network or the other and the priority of them. So the order of the array here matters, as well as it will prefer production networks over non-production networks. So I think that's also worth highlighting, the multi-ledger strategy that's currently being used today for non-DID indie DIDs.
That's right, yeah. So I think we have Indicio testnet as the first one, and then it kind of just goes in order of when we added the new ones. And I think we haven't turned production on for any of them, at least for development, but then you have the option to do that at any time.
Right. And I think we don't currently on here have the sovereign mainnet and the Indicio mainnet, and those would be production ledgers.
Yeah, exactly.
So right now I think we're doing what we should, because especially for instance, sovereign staging net is ordered before sovereign builder net. So this is a proper order of priorities. So awesome. Thank you for adding in the insight on DID Indie, Sam. Any other commentary on this? Wonderful. All right. So, to look at any open PRs here, we have three that are not dependencies. First, the indie post install script that I still need to take a look at. We'll plan on looking at these. And then one for packaging Bifold as a library, working on the framework work here. I know that you and I have been having a bunch of discussion on this, Klesio, but any commentary you want to give to the rest of the community as a whole on this?
So that's moving Bifold to become kind of a framework library with batteries included, because Timo, I'm going to be using your wording now. I like it. So there's a few of boilerplate changes and moving files around. Most of the changes are touching a lot of the files, but they're really moving them, moving things around. A few notes in regards to the dependencies and how peer dependencies may change. And I've played around with using dependencies and peer dependencies. The recommendation right now from React Native, there's this library called Bob for building React Native library. They recommend to use peer dependencies as well for now. The main problem is that React Native doesn't navigate dependencies of dependencies when auto-linking libraries. So that's the part that it breaks. And there's a side effect of potentially having those dependencies getting out of sync, because again, every time you run install or you're patching something, we need a way to keep those dependencies in sync. And I'm not entirely sure how we're going to be doing that over time. So I introduced that React Native builder, Bob, that it's all it does a whole bunch of TypeScript. It compiles to CommonJS, to modules, and does also export the TypeScript definitions. We're still not publishing it, but this is just in preparation to eventually get to a Bifold, this framework, published as an NPM module. There's this library doing all the type checks and so on. And we also found the type check being very helpful during the development lifecycle, as it helps catch anything that you've missed. There is, I'm having some issues right now. I'm balancing, trying to fix the development part of it when you run npm start and you have your emulator, but also when you build the library as a release product right now. I'm running into a little bit of an issue right now that when I fix for one, I break the other one. So I'm just trying to figure it out what is the best way there. Right now, what I've come across is that when you have the module at the top level and you have the app as a child dependency, things seems to work when you're running Metro and npm start and development mode start works fine, but it doesn't work when you're running a release production, when you run the assemble release for Android itself. So I may need to bring those up and make them siblings. So I think James, we talked about creating, I showed you for BC Wallet how I created core in the app. I may need to bring that up, but I'm still trying to make some changes so I don't need to do that. There's a lot of restructuring of the code moving around.
Awesome. Thank you for the overview. Happy to lend a ear also for trying to help address problems that you're running into.
So if there's anybody who has some experience or skill on packaging React Native library and want to get in touch and help out, that'd be great. I'm just kind of learning a little bit as I go.
Any questions or comments for Clessio? Awesome. Thank you for the overview on this one, Clessio. And then Jason, I was wondering if you could give a brief overview on this one, if you could.
Yeah, sure. So we made a few improvements to, I guess it's the workflow. So when you accept a connection, hang on one second here. So when you first scan the QR code for a connection, if a proof or a credential come from that same connection within a short amount of time, it'll automatically shunt you into that workflow rather than take you back to the home screen where you have to click on the notification. And it's just to streamline that, because usually you don't make a connection just for the sake of making a connection. Usually there's a proof or an offer going to come down the pike after that. And this is just trying to tie those two steps together rather than leaving them independent. So I did the first part, which was the connection followed by the offer. And this is the second part, which is a connection followed by a proof, because a proof often is the next thing to come after a connection. Like, I've made a connection with you, prove to me that you're Jason Leach. Okay, you're Jason Leach. Here's the credential I mean to offer you. So it's that. And then we've talked internal. So that's the PR and kind of the end of it. And the continuation of that is we've just been talking internally about how we can maybe tie the two together, because usually workflows come in a batch. You're going to get the connection, then you're going to get a proof, then you might get one or more offers after it, and just different ways to solve that. It's not part of this conversation, but we're internally talking about how to make that a bit of a smoother experience for users. And it does tie back into that machine readable governance conversation we had, and we're just exploring new and improved ideas to bring that together, because everything's so async, and so you don't know what's coming next. So it's really tough for an app to do that concisely, but we're still trying to put a bit of thought into it. So that's it, James, back to you.
Awesome. Thank you for the overview on this. One question I have is, and this may become more obvious from looking at the code, but one of the things that we may want to do for our workflow is to be able to navigate once you have established a connection, navigate to the messaging screen for that contact. So that would be in addition to the credential offer or presentation request. With how you've built it so far, do you think that's something that is extensible and or doable?
I think so. I think after this PR, I've probably got a bit of cleanup to do on the navigation. I may have left a little bit of technical debt behind me, but I think you could probably just drop in your, like I've tried to do it. Let me think here. I think so. I think I'm just trying to think through it on the fly. Maybe I've done it by presenting modals in line because of just the way we wanted the workflow to go. But if we moved it to, I found it a little bit challenging to get modals to, this is probably a lack of experience, but just display the way I wanted them to. Like they've got very limited transitions and we'd never wanted the person to leave the screens, like go back to the home and then go somewhere else or use a push. So my thought was that we could experiment with using a navigation stack and then you could just swap in your own stack to say like, instead of navigating to the home screen after, navigate to the chat screen after. So short answer is yes. Long answer is I'm kind of learning a little bit as I go about navigation stacks. Mm-hmm. And that might be great.
Awesome. That answers my question. Sam, you have your hand up?
I do. When I was listening to your description, I didn't hear you mention goal codes in the invitation at all. Is that something that, and the reason I bring that up is that if the invitation has a goal code that signals that you're looking for a proof or that you plan to issue a credential or whatever that is, that can often inform the next step. And I was curious if you were aware of and planning on that as part of the flow that you were just describing.
It's something we discussed. I believe we looked through the current API for Akapai. You know, when you go to the admin website where it shows you all the API, and we didn't see the goal code implemented in the protocol. So I think I raised an issue for discussion saying, hey, I think we're missing this in Akapai. But yeah, once it's in there, we'll start experimenting with goal codes to see if they improve it. The challenge is like the goal code, it might, like, I don't know if they're a canned list of like, you're going to get a proof or if you can make them up yourselves, because we still don't know if you're going to get a proof followed by two credentials or three credentials or just one credential. So the short answer is yes, but we're not sure how that's going to work just.
So if I could, you had a question there, like, how do you know which goal codes are? Can you just make them up? Or is there a list? And the answer is kind of both. We didn't presume to understand all of the goal codes that might be used. And so the standard is there for how you communicate them. The saving grace there is that they are intended for a streamlining of UX, not necessarily required to make it function at all, which means that if you don't understand a goal code and you proceed as normal, then things should work. It just gives you the opportunity, should you recognize one, to be able to smoothly transition the user to the next thing. Obviously, you're talking about how to smoothly transition the user if something kind of happens then anyway, which is good. And that's a great default behavior. So that's why I wanted to bring that up. The concept of goal codes is there, and goal codes will also transition and be present in DIDCOM V2. Although because the handshake protocols are different, it shows up in a little bit different manner, but they still persist across there. So I wanted to bring that up. It sounds like what you're doing is good. And I think the approach is good. I just wanted to see if you'd talked about that. Thanks.
Yep. Back to you,
Jim. Akif, you've got your hand up.
Yeah. I just wanted to echo that in terms of the discussion around goal codes, I think the challenge with us right now is standardizing which goal codes there are and what they mean. And I think even if we have like a basic list, we could actually start implementing that, I think, into the wallet. But I do think a really important discussion that needs to be brought up is the work around the machine readable governance and maybe possibly implementing that. Because I thought that was actually a really clever approach to introducing workflows into the wallet on top of some basic functionality. So I'm wondering if maybe we want to have a session to maybe just discuss about how can we implement the goal codes as some to introduce some additional functionality, and maybe we can agree upon some basic codes that we want to introduce, and two, or whether we want to and how we're going to introduce something like machine readable governance that lives on top of this. Not sure what you guys' thoughts are on that.
Plus one for having that conversation.
Yeah, plus one.
Is that, this is a question, I guess, for Sam and Akif. Is that something you think belongs or you would suggest happening in this group, or is this something that belongs at the Aries working group level?
That is a good question. I think that there is a conversation that belongs in this group about the particulars of this project as it's approached, but this may not have been discussed enough. One of the problems that we've had in the past is that with the theory of machine readable governance, it's easy to talk in generalities, but it's hard to make a specific task about like, hey, we should change X to do Y. And one of the things that might be useful is to have a specific example of something that we're trying to implement from a machine readable governance perspective. This is probably, Akif, a little bit different than you were talking about, but I've talked several times before, and I could do this again if it would be useful, about changing the nature of how connections are accepted to allow for trusted information to be presented to the user before we ask them to like accept a connection. And that is a workflow thing in the sense that a connection would come in and you would basically launch into sort of auto retrieval of some type of credential that would be registered in a machine readable governance file. And that way there's sort of a bootstrapping way of gaining some additional, you know, some context of trust with the other party. The easiest example of that we've talked about is a verified email credential, so that you could automatically ask the user for one. If they don't have one to give you, then the same thing that happens today happens. But if they do have one to give you, then that's a credential that you can receive and stick on the screen that you are that you're asking the user to approve the connection with. And so that's a change to sort of the flow of connections. But an incredibly useful one, because no longer are we asking the user to approve a connection based on unverified information anymore. So that might be an example of a machine readable governance workflow that we could start with that can be very concrete instead of just totally abstract.
Yeah, that is a very interesting concept. I remember you mentioning this at the forum. Excuse me. I guess I'm just curious as to how it would work with the current protocols, like, and whether they would have to be modified in order to accommodate that, like with the connection request, you know, it gets established ahead of time, or would this just be some logic that we would bake in to say like, okay, we couldn't verify who the connection is, so we could just sever it kind of thing.
It's really a how you handle the protocols, not a change to the protocols. So I believe that's okay. What you meant by like logic flow changes.
Yeah, it's outside of the protocol level. So,
well, for example, you would the basic idea is that a connection comes in and you basically instantly accept it, but you don't like put it in the accepted list of users' connections yet. You give it some status like pending or tentative or whatever, and then you would immediately try to engage with that party according to the machine readable governance file that you and possibly they have. And that specifies, I think the design specifies goal codes, but also like who the list of approved issuers of a verified email credential. And then the fallback behavior is that if you try to engage with the user on something and they don't respond within some timeout, then you assume that they're not capable of speaking that and you would do something else. Like you would then prompt the user and say, hey, is this a connection you want to accept? you know, and you might include a note like we were unable to verify stuff, but here's the label that they provided. And it would be the same. But the difference is really how you handle the protocol, meaning, you know, you go through like something like DataExchange and you do that first without really prompting, without asking the user about it. You try to do the handshake. If it succeeds, then you prompt the user with trusted information. If it fails, you prompt the user with untrusted information. And then based on their action, you're either going to like change the status of the existing connection you already made, or you're going to delete it.
Yeah, so there's two things that come to mind. A, this is a great example of how we can use machine-readable governance to enable this type of workflow. And I think B, we could also really make use of the connection metadata, which is available. It's just I don't think we're using it extensively right now to enable these types of things. And that might be something that we want to start doing.
Do you mean connection metadata as an internal object structure inside of AFJ?
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't mean like the label present in the invitation by metadata?
No. Cool. There is a structure that lives on top of the connection record. I believe that's the one I'm talking about.
Nice. Okay, cool. That's awesome. This sounds like exactly the right thing.
Yeah.
So one of the things that needs to happen, and I need to connect with Mike a little, who is the kind of ended up becoming the world expert on machine readable governance because everyone else took a step back when at the right time. So I need to connect with him and kind of see where we are on that. And what I think we should probably do as a community, and this is probably an Aries topic, not an AFJ specific topic, actually come up and finalize that stuff, at least come up with like version one of what we're going to attempt to do. And then the next step would be inside of this call to say, great, now that thing exists, how do we actually want to implement this? And that would be fantastic. Well, one of the coming criticisms of DIDCOM is that it doesn't provide enough for trusted communication to actually take place. It provides you all the foundation, but then doesn't actually do it. And so having machine-readable governance, and I don't think DIDCOM should, to be clear, as a core protocol, but having the machine-readable governance that is like the thing you layer on top of DIDCOM to solve this problem from a trust perspective is the right answer. And I think that demonstrating that within Bifold here in showing that there's a better way to do connections that involves trust, I think it like gets me giddy excited.
I know we've had some conversations behind the scenes about how to do a verified verifier, and then you mentioned the verified email there. We're looking from the organization point of view. For instance, for our use case, when we're developing BC Wallet, how can we give the user some confidence that who is on the other side, it is who says it is on the other side, right? Because anybody can be a verifier, which is a good thing and can also be a bad thing. So we did have some kind of a really brief conversation about having this verification protocol where you connect, the wallet connects, and then you'd request for a verify organization credential, and then you'd kind of toggle some sort of a check mark, say that, yes, that's a verified connection that you can use. Otherwise, the wallet just informed the user this is an unverified one. Can still use it, but it's your own risk. I'm very interested in how that could be translated to a machine readable governance style.
So I have lots to say about that, but I don't want to hijack the meeting. James, if you want to, I'm happy to talk about it now real quick, or we can stick it on a future agenda, whatever you think is wise.
I'm going to stick it to future agenda. I think there's a...
there wasn't too much left on the agenda today, so we can discuss now. I think I guess I'd ask if there's any other topics or questions for maintainers that anybody would want to raise.
Actually, I have one quick question, and I know this is probably more related to AFJ, is compiling the Indie SDK so that we can enable iOS simulators. I don't know if there's a path or a roadmap for that. And maybe this is not the right forum for that discussion. Maybe we can bring that up there.
I think it's relevant to this group, but I think it would make sense to bring up on the AFJ call.
Okay. Yep.
I will note that to see if I can get that on the agenda for Thursday.
Sounds good.
Awesome. I think that we may want to have additional discussion in the future, but I think we have a little bit of time if you want to follow up, Sam.
I would love to. This is like a favorite topic of mine. So from a people perspective, there's two, the easiest way to do it is something like verified email or maybe a verified social network thing. And those are coming, but they're not here. The easiest one to do is a verified email. There's the most amount of work in that area. From a business perspective, that doesn't really make sense. You probably could do it, but it's weird. So there's two techniques that machine readable governance is involved in. Well, there's kind of three that I'll mention. The two that I think are the most exciting, there's a direct method and an indirect method for verification of businesses or organizations. That includes issuers and verifiers and like any other sort of organization that you're going to interact with. One is there's a machine readable governance files kind of out of necessity right now have a list of accepted people for different roles. So like, hey, here's a list of approved issuers or a list of approved verifiers. And it literally starts with like the public did of the organization. So if it's an issuer, it would be the did that they would actually issue their credentials under. And if they produce an invitation that uses that did first and then rotates to another one, then you can still know that that party started from that public did, demonstrated ownership of the key, and so they're just an approved person. So it's an interesting case. If they're already in a machine readable governance file that's loaded into the agent or that the user has enabled, there's a different discussion around that, but then you might even not have to do that initial dance where you ask them something because they're just already in the list. That's an easy way to sort of kickstart these things, but has the limitation of scale. If you have a goal to have thousands of approved verifiers, then sticking them all in one list that everyone has to download is just not great. And so the next step is an indirect method. And the language of this says they are a trusted party for some particular thing. If they can present a credential issued by this small set of issuing parties. So in this case, it's indirect. There's a smaller list of sort of those top level issuers that the machine readable governance specifies. And then if you could present a credential of a specific schema from any of those issuers, then you're in the door. And this allows for that indirection where you might have thousands and thousands of these folks that you've never listed and you have a much smaller machine readable governance file. So this scales much better. And in that case, you would need to actually engage with them and say, hey, I would like you to present a credential of this type. Here's the schema, or, you know, here's a reference to the machine readable governance file that I'm interested in. Or the other party can offer a credential and say, hey, I would like to, you know, I can give you a credential that satisfies this, you know, these machine readable governance frameworks. And then you can sort of coordinate on that. From a protocol update perspective, I anticipate that as we get into this, we will discover areas where some additional information might be useful in the presentation of a credential, or maybe even the issuance of a credential. But we're trying to learn more before we attempt any protocol updates there. And the goal behind the protocol update would be one that is a optional sort of helpful thing if it's there, but doesn't kill the solution if it's not. So those are the two that focus on machine readable governance. You have the one that lists the parties' dids directly. That's like their direct. And then you have the indirect method. And the indirect method has not really been deployed yet, but it's always been the primary thing that we've imagined being enabled by machine readable governance frameworks. So the progress on that could be really rapid if we have that use case. And we have agents that are capable of actually having this conversation, you know, like during the establishment of a connection. There's a third one that's interesting because it's very generic in the sense that it isn't necessarily tied to a machine readable governance, although maybe it could be, but might be useful in the generic sense for organizations. And this has to do with the verified domain. I'm blanking on the exact title, but there's work that the DIF did about verifying domains for the parties you're connecting to. So in this case, if you are the organization that runs example.com, you would be able to present to me something. It's not exactly a proof because of the way that it works, but it's you could say, hey, I control example.com, and there's enough information for you to go to example.com and retrieve a .well-known file that then has a signed thing by the DID that the other party actually is, so that you can actually verify that the party you're talking to and owns that DID also controls example.com. And this would be useful generically in the sense that this might be an exchange you could have with the other party, and that you could then have a verified thing on the screen for the user that says, hey, this is you're connecting to a valid party or representative of example.com. And that would be really useful in the case of people that are, it's kind of like the verified email thing, but from a domain level, that I think could work at a higher level. There is probably some interplay of machine readable governance, but it isn't quite as direct as the both direct and the indirect method that I mentioned before. Okay, that's my like blurting out of all of the stuff in my brain at the top level for this. Comments, questions? Did I say something wrong?
I think that's great. That aligns with some of the conversations we have been having behind the scenes, and some of as we are deploying our wallet, there has been some questions about the trusted verifier or trusted issuer. I think we're going to be running to that maybe sooner. How can we provide some hints from the wallet perspective that I trust that issuer, that verifier? And your options align with the options that we have been talking about, and I can see them kind of aligning as well with the current, a little bit of the certificate model where we have authorities that verify your identity. The cryptographic thing kind of comes from free, but they provide the value is guaranteeing that you are who you say you are, and the person who I mentioned the certificate is who they say they are. And that falls into that indirect method for where some organizations would be trusted. We trust that governance process to issue that credential. That's great.
It's super exciting for me. I'm staring at Canada, right, as a great way to lead this. It's super exciting for me to have someone pioneer the indirect method, because I think that gives an opportunity for, you know, agents that want to work with Canadian citizens, et cetera, to have published machine readable governance frameworks by government authorities. And Canada seems to be sort of one of the possible leaders here to say, hey, here's the people that we think are valid issuers or verifiers of these credentials. Or in the sense of that indirect method, because I think that we need a leader there to show why this is valuable and how it can scale. But also to show the power of machine readable governance frameworks in the sense that ultimately the user can decide which of those machine readable governance frameworks they like or not. And in that way, it helps people to understand that the purpose of machine readable governance is to recognize existing authorities, not to try and establish some brand new one that we're trying to, you know, to establish, because that's not the point. We're trying to do this other stuff, and it's going to look like for the verified email thing is going to look like the community is trying to invent some new thing. The reason we're doing it is because no one else has, and someone's got to start. But having someone that actually represents an existing authority be involved here, I think will help people get the right idea about the way that this is supposed to work and the value that it provides.
Yeah, because we do have in BC, we have the org book, and we're having some thoughts about it. How can we get that kind of a core credential to the hand of the business, and they can then use that to present ownership of their business, right, or authority of their business. So that would be one way that they can use their verified organization credential.
Well, and that can be a useful credential for people to prove that, hey, the DID you're connecting to is actually valid for the business. Because we've all decided to trust the BC org book within BC, or, you know, whatever happens in the other provinces, et cetera. But if we all decide to trust that person and they present, to, you know, that the org book or the organization there, and the business presents a credential, then that's the foundation of trust. Hey, this is in fact the business that I am. And you might be trying to facilitate payment when you're sitting in a restaurant or verify a contractor licensing status or something. And to be able to start off with a trusted name of the business or logo of the business or something in a trusted manner is just incredibly powerful there. Sorry, I've said a lot. I'm just really excited about this.
I've heard about there was a case or a scenario somewhere in Europe where there was this QR code being spoofed.
Yeah.
Does anybody here?
I do know about that.
Actually, do you have a link to any material about that?
I could probably dig one up. I don't have one at my fingertips. The basics of what happened was that they decided against advice to print invitation QR codes and have them like in a paper form on display. The problem with that is that it's really easy for someone to insert their own in that place and perform a man in the middle injection. And there's ways to secure systems around that. And honestly, machine readable governance is one of those. In that if you scan an invitation QR code and the information present in the QR code is not validated in an already known machine readable governance file that you could warn the user to not proceed, that would be one great way of solving that problem. It was not handled well. This was a situation where there was a vendor that was sort of pressured to do things that they advised against. And then the Chaos Computer Club over in Germany got involved and pointed out the problems with it, which were known at the time, but and advised against, but they did it anyway. And so it received a bunch of bad press in a really unfortunate way because of kind of how that went down and the advice that was ignored.
Right. Awesome. Thank you. Time for the next meeting.
Yes.
Sorry, I talk so much. I apologize.
Your thoughts have been great, Sam, everybody.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk again in at least 4 weeks. Thanks, everybody.
James, bye, everybody.